welcome to Cooler Than Homework, a Disney Channel original movie podcast. I'm Nicole Sweeney, and my racing song would be Tom Petty's Running Down a Dream.
I'm Matthew Gatos, and my running racing song that I only ever listen to because it has the best tempo to run to, so please listen to this song while you run, and you will run 10 miles nonstop. I've never done that, but it's Collard Greens by Schoolboy Q.
My name is Wettiness, and I don't run, but if I had to, like, ride a horse fast, I would listen to Level Up by Sierra.
That is on my running playlists.
I don't know any of these songs.
classic.
And I'm Sari Riley, and my racing song is the City Escape theme from Sonic Adventure, because he runs fast, and so do I.
I don't know any of these songs, followed by picking a video game song is the most on-brand introduction I think you have had yet.
I know people on Twitter were analyzing, like, the tropes of our podcast. A lot of them are me not knowing things.
Sorry, Google's Johnny Cash.
And now you have songs to Google this episode already, so we're off to a great start.
Yeah. This week, we are talking about Ready to Run, and there's songs in it. Mari, make that make sense.
I'll do my best. Ready to Run is about a girl named Corey Ortiz, and she dreams big of being a jockey, just like her father was. Her father died in a racing accident, however, so that makes Corey's mom solidly team no when it comes to racing, even though Corey feels she is ready to run. Corey works for a Mr. Machado, who is a horse trainer and who has fallen on some hard times. He's got a long-standing rivalry with another owner or trainer named Garris, who's got some problems of his own. One of his horses gets hurt, and he's quick to want to kill it off and collect the insurance money, so Corey secretly sets the horse free and discovers that she can hear horses' thoughts and talk to them. And yes, this is a movie with talking horses. I did not know at all. Garris is also having trouble with a horse named Thunder Jam, who refuses to leave the starting gate. In a fit of anger, he threatens to get rid of him for a bag of peanuts, and Corey is on hand to take him literally and buy Thunder Jam for a bag of peanuts. Corey's mom is upset about how Corey owns a horse now, but Mr. Machado agrees to stable and train Thunder Jam and let his winnings pay for his keep. Corey's mom gives in, even though she makes her promise not to race, even if she is ready to run. Next up, they need a new jockey, and they hire baby Logan Eccles, his obvious stunt double, to be their new jockey. Even though his background is in circus riding, baby Logan Eccles is quirky. He's like a surfer bro, but a horse rider. It's great. I don't know.
A horse bro, if
he's
you will.
A horse bro.
But also a clown. Yeah.
Yes, all of these things are correct. Anyways, he likes to race with headphones on. It's the music piece of it. You see. The beats help him, I guess. Also, fine, his name is B. Moody in the movie. Together, Machado, Corey, and Moody manage to train Thunder Jam until he is ready to run. There's a mean horse at his first race, though, so TJ gets real nervous. But at the last second, Corey takes Moody's headphones and puts them on Thunder Jam, so this helps him drown out, I don't know, his everybody's thoughts, and he runs into the lead. At the last moment, though, the mean horse kicks him, hurting Thunder Jam and causing him to lose the race. Still, though, TJ gets lots of good press, and he is back up and ready to run quickly and starts winning races. People love the horse with the headphones on. He's great. People love him. The owner of the racetrack they run on has signed Thunder Jam up for a derby in California, even though it's short notice. Machado agrees that they are ready to run.
I I should just like interject really quickly that we have on snarksquad.com in posts, we do this thing called the title star. So like whenever a character will say the title of an episode, like we give the character the gold star for saying the title of the episode, because it's always very like funny and like on the nose moment. And this movie says the title so many times.
so many times.
So if you're just listening to this podcast and you did not watch this movie, like, this is not, Mari is not making this up. keeping with what happened.
This is an accurate representation. My plot synopsis, okay, they are to the letter. Okay, Garrus is really upset about all of this, and he decides to go talk to Thunder Jam in the barn threateningly. Like, he honestly just stands there and threatens the horse while smoking a cigar. Like, I have no idea why that happens. I mean, I do, because the ash from his cigar starts an accidental fire in the barn. Corey can sense that something is wrong with TJ, and her and Moody run over to help. They manage to get the horses out, but in the process, Moody burns his hands, and he is no longer Corey's mom. It's like, too bad, it's so sad, because she still won't let Corey race, but Corey's grandmother is like, you can't hold her back forever. So Corey's mom comes around and gives Corey permission to race, even giving her her father's old riding silks. At the Gold Rush Derby, Garrus has filed a complaint about the headphones, so Thunder Jam can't use them. Corey asks TJ if he is ready to run, and he says he still is, but he gets off to a rough start. Moody takes matters into his own hands and hijacks the sound system to play Thunder Jam's music. TJ gets back into his groove and wins the race, earning them a whole lot of money. So they build a house and spruce up the barn. There was a lot more talking to horses in here than my summary implied. But I don't know how you recap any of that. The end.
Before we get to all of the talking horses, or actually, I don't know, maybe the talking horses will come up here.
They will.
Great. Where are the cast, human and animal, of this movie now?
Where are these horses now?
Are they on a farm upstate living their happy lives?
I'm going to say yes, because I didn't do any horse Googling. Sorry. And I also have zero concept of how long horses live.
Yeah, truly know nothing about a horse.
Yeah. Are horses 300 years old? Who knows? They're the tortoises of horses. Sari, don't say anything science-y and prove me wrong.
Oh, I'm not a horse girl, so I have no idea.
All right. So I'm going to start off with Jason Doring, who we alluded to earlier, plays B. Moody in this movie, but also was on Veronica Mars and iZombie. And I don't know this man, but...
I know him.
Hey.
Wow. iZombie was also a Rob Thomas show. So it was basically like Rob Thomas created Veronica Mars, not Matchbox 20 Rob Thomas, but he was the creator of Veronica Mars and then went on to create iZombie, which is very much what if Veronica was a zombie.
The premise of iZombie. I had never heard it described that way. Now I want to watch it.
The fun fact I found out about him when perusing his like IMDb trivia and stuff.
I hate it.
One, I found it interesting that like he seems to have only signed up for social media to promote the like Veronica Mars reboot, because he did a lot of posting when that was happening, and then like nothing since and nothing before. So he was like, all right, you guys want me to have an Instagram? Here you go. But this might be, Nicole, what you know about. His father was the chairman of Neopets until 2005.
No, that's not the thing I hate.
Oh.
Well, now you have to tell us what you hate, because that once I saw that fact, nothing else that was important to me.
No, the fact that his dad was the founder of Neopets is cool. The thing that I hate is that he's a Scientologist, and I assume that is related to his like non-presence on social media.
Gotcha. I did not find that in my research. I was very surface level Neopets. Yeah.
I love the idea that for like 10 to 15 seconds, Matt was like, why does she hate Neopets so much?
Yeah. Well, that's what, like when you were like, oh, I know this. I was like, oh, it must be the Neopets thing. And then you were like, I hate it. I was like, this doesn't seem right.
His dad's like a billionaire. So just like in general, I do hate billionaires. So like that makes sense.
Yeah, he was probably like the chairman of a bunch of things just in name.
Yes.
No, that's less fun.
Sorry.
Moving on to someone more fun. We have Nestor Serrano, who plays Hector Machado. And he is like one of those guys I recognized in seeing this, but I had no idea what from. And looking at his IMDb, I still don't know, because he plays a cop or a mayor on every TV show that's ever existed. Oh. And he's always just like hardened detective who's unsure of things. He's in Bad Boys. He's in a bunch of things. Most interestingly, he played Pancho Martin, a horse trainer in the movie Secretariat.
Mm.
And I was like, wait, you're playing just like, that's the weirdest typecasting, is playing another horse trainer.
Horse trainer, yeah.
In a horse racing movie.
I love that for him.
Yeah. I feel like this man looks like he could play a horse trainer. It's like, yeah, sure, why not?
Look at his credits. He has experience.
Yeah. So pulling back the curtain a little bit here, there's a handful of people in this who just don't have a lot going on. Like, they've done other things since then, but it's mostly just like, and then they kept acting in things that you maybe haven't seen. So this might be a little bit briefer of a segment, but I do want to touch on something that's a little bit more heavy, serious real quick, and then we'll get back to some of the other ones. Teresa Saldana, who plays the mom in this movie, before this, long before this, she was in Raging Bull and had a role in the TV show Commish. The reason I say this is a heavier thing is I wanted to bring this up because I thought it was interesting and a good thing to know about her, is that in 1982, she was attacked by a stalker who was obsessed with her. And following her long recovery, she founded the Victims for Victims organization and participated in lobbying for the 1990 anti-stalking law and the 1994 Driver's Privacy Protection Act, because the way this guy tracked her down, both of which those things came into being partially because of the attack that she had, like that the guy attacked her. And the experience also inspired her to play herself in the television movie Victims for Victims, the Teresa Saldana story. And so that was, I don't know, I found that fascinating. Then yeah. Like, very interesting. She did also sadly pass away in 2016 due to pneumonia, but seemed like she lived a very interesting, like, advocate lifestyle. And yeah, I just wanted to make sure everyone knew about that.
Her badass past.
Yeah.
On a much, much less serious note, we have Sinbad as the voice of Hollywood Shuffle, sometimes just referred to as Hollywood in this movie. He's a horse, if I didn't make that clear. Sinbad is, you know, a stand-up comedian, and you probably know him from Jingle All the Way, First Kid, Good Burger. More recently, he's been doing things like the TV show Rel, or he's still voice acting in Steven Universe. I am very, very curious if Sari knows who Sinbad is.
No, I thought that was the name of the horse when it came up. I thought that was like, I don't know, Sinbad the horse is now Hollywood the horse, or TJ. I apologize to Sinbad.
That's all we need. That's all I was looking for, Sari, was an apology for Sinbad.
I am so sorry. I have watched Steven Universe, but did not recognize his voice.
He's the voice of Mr. Smiley.
Oh.
While we're on the topic of horse voices, TJ, Thunder Jam himself, is voiced by Paul Rodriguez, who is a famous stand-up comedian who has had a bunch of bit parts on TV shows and movies, but really, like, this man is just a stand-up comedian who's been very famous for a very long time, and he's still doing that. He's still a stand-up comedian, still doing his thing. And then we also had the voice of Cyclone, who's like the bully horse that we get near the end of the movie, who it was a very interesting little, like, wrinkle they wanted to throw into this plot. But he is voiced by, I'm going to mess up this name, Rick Duckman, Duco Mamun. He's got so many letters in his last name that don't work next to each other. But he is a guy, again, you would recognize his face if you saw him. He plays the best friend in The Burbs. He's in Groundhog Day, which, Sari, you would definitely know him from that. He's one of the guys who gets drunk with Phil when they're like going to crash the car into the train.
I like Googled him for that reason. I don't recognize his face. So I think I am just like face blind or something, but because I've seen that movie 15 times. He's just like a generic white dude, though. So
yes, he very much was like that guy in the 80s and 90s that was just like playing the best friend who's goofy. But yeah, he was the voice of Cyclone. So they actually like it was interesting to see that they got like three established like comedic actors to come in and be the voices of these horses. I don't know what the thought process behind that was of like this will get the parents to come watch Ready to Run or whatever. But it was interesting, period. Next up, we have Christian Guerrero, who plays Gabby Ortiz, the little brother in this movie. And I just wanted to mention him, but not because he's done a lot since then, since this, that like is big and notable, but he's still writing and acting. He's singing. He's in musical theater. He teaches online classes right now through Zoom, if you want to take some musical theater classes. But he's also got a delightful Instagram, which, you know, is my favorite thing to find from a DCOM actor. He's got a delightful Instagram where he's been posting lots of things during his quarantine, like daily videos of him cooking while lip syncing to Christina Aguilera, and it's lots of fun.
Who doesn't want that?
Next up on the list will be Chrissy Perez, who plays Corey, the main star of the film. And I could not find anything about her verifiable on the internet. I think maybe I found her Instagram, but there is nothing to say that it was for sure her. And the thing that tied that together with the little brother character is that that actor now on his Instagram like posted a photo from Ready to Run as like a throwback Thursday, and I was like, yes, people, this is what I need for my research. I need you to acknowledge that you were in a DCOM at one point. So yeah, I believe she's just off living a normal life. Yeah, it was that thing where I could not find any sort of like Ready to Run cast, where are they now type articles. So who knows? I'm going to say last but not least, we have Lillian Hurst, who plays the grandmother in this movie. The only person that I recognized really in this movie outside of the voice acting like immediately was her. It's one because she's still acting in a lot of things, but also because she played Hurley's mom on Lost. And I was like, oh, yes, no, big major role on Lost. And then she's also on Dharma and Greg and Orange County and Arrested Development. And she just plays like the very recognizable, like, I don't know. I recognized her. I don't know if anybody else did. But yeah, other than that, a lot of these people in this movie were local, like New Zealand actors, because they shot this thing in New Zealand, even though it takes place in California. And yeah, so a lot of them I was looking up and they were like, yeah, in 8 episodes of Xena, in this many episodes of Hercules, in this many episodes of this, also in King Kong and in other Peter Jackson projects. So it was like a lot of like local New Zealand actors as well. But yeah, that's where those horses and casts are now.
Before we discuss all of our feelings about Ready to Run, nostalgia check. Do you remember watching this movie prior to last night or this morning?
Nope.
No, I was like the exact opposite of a horse girl growing up. So I was like, this one has horses. Absolutely not. No.
Big same, both on no and also on being the opposite of a horse girl. We went to a farm once for like a field trip when I was in elementary school, and I was the one kid who refused to milk a cow. I was like, no, this is gross. I hate this.
And very obviously no. I searched Born to Run and was like confused why it wasn't on Disney Plus for a while. And for a while, I mean by like a whole minute, like scrolling through being like, it has to be here somewhere. And then found it eventually.
Okay, so this movie was new to all of us. This was a first time experience. Mm-hmm. Did you enjoy this experience? Oh, man. Mari, sounds like you got something to say.
It was fine. It was a middling kind of movie for me. I think at the very beginning, I was like, oh no, I'm not going to like this. Because it had like a super strong telenovela feel at the very beginning, specifically because how dramatic everybody was being and like the acting and like the long looks and things. And I was like, okay, I mean, I can get behind that like direction, but also this is not going to be enjoyable. But it settled down and then it kept doing this. Like it introduced the horse talking thing and I was like, oh no. But then that settled down too and it wasn't quite as bad as I like expected. So it just kind of settled into a very middling sort of decom for me. I think I'll remember it because of the talking horses, but it won't like live strongly in my feelings.
Yeah, when I was going to try and like rank this on our little ranking sheet, I struggled of like where to land with it, and I settled somewhere in the middle as well, just above Rip Girls, because I was like, this is the same movie as Rip Girls in a lot of ways, but slightly better in my mind. So it's just directly above Rip Girls because it was that same sort of like, you're not allowed to do the thing you like to do. So because your parent died and then you can still do it. I changed my mind.
That is exactly where I put it originally too. And I've been sitting here like moving it back and forth. Like it's 9 or 10 and like Rip Girls and Ready to Run are gonna keep alternating that spot. I don't know where we're gonna land by the end of this conversation, but like, yes, it is precisely the same movie. There are things that I liked better about this, but there are a couple things that I liked better about Rip Girls. And it's literally just like, I don't know. I don't know which of these identical movies. Would I rather have this movie on a beach or this movie with horses?
On the beach, obviously. And also I'm upset because Rip Girls is like 6 for me. And the fact that you think that this movie is better than Rip Girls is highly upsetting to me personally.
I agree 100%, Mari. Rip Girls is 7 for me. And I put Ready to Run just barely above Horse Sense because I was like, okay, did I like it better or worse than the other horse movie? And I decided I liked it slightly better. Ready to Run is down at 14 for me.
It is really the same movie as Rip Girls, only there's like talking horses, which the talking horses were really off-putting to me. I will say that is like the main reason that I had originally put it right below Rip Girls rather than right above it, is that I agree with Mari that it eventually calmed down enough that it didn't bother me that much by the end of the movie, but like the way that it was first introduced and like, I don't know, the comedian voices that they were using, everything about that was not my jam, but it was the kind of thing that I was like, if I were a kid, I could see how this would be very fun for me, but I just, as a 32-year-old woman, could not get into the talking horses.
The fact that they were all voiced by like famous comedians, like that was a revelation to me because it made it seem like they wanted that part to be funny. There was nothing really like comedic about what, like all of the comedy was like, oh, this girl is crazy, she hears horses, but the horses themselves were not saying anything funny.
I think a lot of that comedy, like I think that the horse talking was meant to be funny in that it was like, what would a horse say in this kind of situation? Like, that's funny to think that a horse might say, I taught him everything he knows or what, like whatever. It's just, it's like,
I did like that scene, like the little like weird babe farm scene where everyone's watching the TV and the little sheep is like helping them get out of their horse stalls. I thought that was cute, but that was like a different movie.
Please, Matt, Crumpet the goat. Uses yes. God-given name.
Crumpet is so good.
I do love Crumpet also, which is why I must defend his honor. Don't call him a sheep.
To the Rip Girls comparison, the other thing that I did like more about this is that they did not have the same dynamics of like the mystery surrounding the parents' death. Like they didn't tell the audience precisely what happened to her dad right away, but it's clear that she knew, like she knows what happened to her dad
right.
and why her mom doesn't want her to be on a horse. Like she obviously wants to be on a horse and she's gonna like fight for, you know, to have that opportunity because she's a kid and like whatever, and like clearly it didn't traumatize her the way that it traumatized her mother, but like that dynamic was there. The whole dynamic with the dad and Rip Girls is honestly the main reason that I like that. That one does not live well in my feelings because
Same.
That man, I hate that man. I have a separate spreadsheet ranking the dads of DCOM.
Yes. It would be like one, dead, two, dead, three.
Yeah, the same. I had the exact same thought process when I was trying, when I was ranking it above Rip Girls, was like, oh yeah, no, the parents in Rip Girls I did not like as much. Like, the stepmom's okay in that, but the dad sucks so much. And like, the mom and the grandma in this are like nice and seem to like have her best interest in mind, and it's like not keeping secrets from her, and I liked that dynamic a lot more than the Rip Girls one.
Also, baby Logan Eccles was a more competent actor than any of the kids in Rip Girls.
He was a clown surfer bro.
That's not his fault.
Yeah, he didn't have too much to do. He leaned in really hard to his clown surfer bro character. Which I guess is good acting for a kid.
He did it. He did the thing.
Yeah.
You remind me a lot of Bo Burnham's character in Parks and Rec. Like the country singer, like who's like just really putting on this role. Because when he first showed up, I was like, okay, he's going to have a weird southern accent and he's going to be like this like old cowpokey kind of kid. And like all of a sudden he's like, dude, bro. And I'm like, wait, what? Who is this character? I don't know anything about him, but he's got weird layers to him.
I was really hoping, Matt, that you would find something on the actress who plays Corey, because I guess I forgot for a second that I was watching a DCOM, but also, I mean, every other DCOM has been so in our face about being like, I'm 13, mom. And so you're like, oh, that's a 13-year-old girl. I had no idea how old they wanted us to believe that Corey was. I don't know. And then the actress was kind of ambiguously aged as well. Like, she could have been any number in her teens and I would have bought it. And she never went to school. And she had no friends her age to gauge by. And I don't know how old the surfer clown bro was. And were they flirting? I don't know. I don't know. I was just really confused about her age in general. And then when I was like getting ready for the plot synopsis, it said that she was 14, and I was like, was she? And so I wanted to know what the actress's actual age at the time was, but she's gone, she's missing.
Yeah, and unfortunately the most I learned about her was that she was from Texas, and that's about it. So I don't know. I also, we had this discussion while we were watching it last night, and was like, is she supposed to be playing like 13 like all these other ones? But I guessed 15, so if she's supposed to be 14, I guess that's close.
Yeah, I didn't even realize that this is maybe part of why I didn't like it as much, because I don't know, I didn't think very hard about it. But now that Mari said that, it didn't feel like a DCOM in that it was more like a story just like floating in space, where it feels like so many other DCOMs are very like flesh out the life enough outside to know, so you know that the kids are teens and the kids have teen problems, but all her problems were horse related. And then Clown Boy comes in. Has he ever been to school, or is he just a rodeo boy? Who knows? There's so many mysteries around these children that it is just so far removed from reality. Even more so than something like Halloween Town, because at least they were kids who go trick or treating or were whatever. I don't even remember the plot of the movie, but they like I feel like they had slightly more grounding in, I have a normal family life, I don't just like ride horses all the time.
Well, and I think this whole world of this film takes place within about 200 feet of everything else. Like, they live maybe above the cafe where the mom works, which is right like across the parking lot from the horse track and the barn where they spend their entire days. And I'm like, their entire world is in this like square city block. I have no idea what is on the other side of that hill that horse just ran to. Is there a highway there? Is that horse okay? You can't just let horses out, Corey.
I also believe that maybe Corey doesn't know what's on the other side of that horizon.
Yeah, it's like a Truman Show thing. She's stuck in this weird horse bubble.
Okay, mm-hmm. You just mentioned something that also highly upset me. There were two moments that were just like deeply upsetting to me personally. And one was the bad horse CGI and her like and her little wave at the horse and it being like, hey, I'm free. That whole sequence was awful. It burned my eyes. I hated looking at it. It was like the stuff of nightmares, honestly. That CGI horse is going to haunt my nightmares. And the second was B. Moody when he's like showing off his circus tricks and it's obviously not him. It's not Jason Doring. And they don't even try at all. They don't try at all to be like, this is not a stunt double. It's obviously not him. And both of those things, I was like, come on. Give a little effort. Try a little bit.
Yeah, this continues the tradition of DCOMs with adult stunt doubles playing children.
I have a question for all of you who know music better than I do. I'm guessing that the Ready to Run song was made for this movie. Like, this mm-hmm. is an original song that they hoped would take off as people became a fan of the horse and also wanted to run. Were all the songs that the horse listened to movie written?
Okay, I don't know the answer to that question, but I do want to say that that song plays after B. Moody names a series of bands that sound nothing like that song.
Yeah. It's kind of hilarious. Like, he's like, all right, the Chili Peppers, Pearl Jam, Zeppelin, and then he hands her the headphones, and it's like this like very poppy, moody, pop-punky kind of thing.
That's not good to run to at all. What is happening?
Because I am not a horse girl, because I know nothing about horses. Look, I don't fucking know if that's a great song to trot a horse to or whatever. Maybe it is. It just, that song is nothing like any of the three bands B. Moody just named. No musical relationship whatsoever.
In the small amount of research I did on this specific topic, the guy who made the music, it seems like he was just like a for hire, did a lot of DCOM music, and now does a lot of sort of those additional music credits on TV shows and things. And I think part of that is because I found a royalty-free music site where he has like 300 tracks available. So wow. I don't know that these tracks for this movie were like royalty-free music, but I think that's like kind of, this guy gets a lot of credits on things because he makes royalty-free music and then people use his royalty-free music. Mm-hmm. But yes, those songs were not anything that I think anyone has ever listened to outside of watching this movie.
Mm-hmm. I will also say that when I was looking, so I just like Googled Ready to Run because I wanted to understand a little bit more context to this movie because I didn't watch it when I was growing up. And I found it first after like Disney Plus, there's like a resurgence of like just listicles and things of like DCOMs and ranked. And I mean, we're doing this podcast, so I'm not like mocking them or anything. I just say there's a lot out there right now. So this one was on like 5 DCOMs you totally forgot that aren't that bad. And it started off like 1, Can of Worms. And I'm like, you're wrong. They are going to go away.
First of all, your taste cannot be trusted.
Yeah. But then in another list that had this, it mentioned that like people, this one is like not as well known. And I'm assuming the music also did not take off because it was almost immediately pulled from rotation. They showed it once and then it were like, ooh. And then like it wasn't one of the ones that got repeated often, which I'm finding that the ones that that live strongly in my memory, it's not only that I watched them as a child, it's that Disney shoved them in our faces. Like they were playing this multiple times, especially like around like the grand premiere. Sometimes they even premiered it and then played it again immediately after, like back to back. And they're like, did you like that? Watch it again. So it was like a very strategic, like, I don't know, marketing to children, of especially because kids watch things over and over again. This one they didn't play a lot. And so whatever they intended with it didn't happen. From the music onward, they just didn't push this one a lot.
I found on YouTube, Disney Channel - Ready to Run song with 6,795 views. And there's 4 comments. One of them is gibberish. One of them is, hey, don't know if you're still on here, but I found Stanley A. Smith on Twitter. I think if enough people tweet him about the song, maybe he will make a single of the song. I tried looking for it on the internet, but can't find it anywhere. I even looked on Amazon. And then another one is, who sings this song? And then the person who posted the YouTube video says, I don't remember and it doesn't say anymore on IMDb.com. However, I believe it was just for the movie and there's no soundtrack that I know of. I love this song, though. So someone loved this Ready to Run song so much that they found it and posted a YouTube video for the other 6,000 people.
Okay, yeah. No, 5,000 of those plays is that one dude just playing it over and over again. As he's running.
Related to the music, I just kind of rolled with the idea that you could put headphones sort of near a horse's head.
Yeah, not on the ears at all.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. And it was happy with that.
It made me think of that stupid internet meme that is like, how would a horse wear pants over his back legs or over all his legs? Because they kept just thinking, how would a horse wear headphones? Is that correct? Because it doesn't feel correct to me.
It's like that. There was that picture of Arthur going around like on Twitter where from the cartoon show Arthur, where Arthur is like sitting at a computer and he's got headphones on, but the headphones are like at human height on Arthur's head, but clearly Arthur's ears are on top of his head, and people are just like, wait, what? That doesn't work. And it's like, yeah, I was trying to figure out not only like are those close enough to his ears that he can hear it, but also like how big is a horse's head compared to a human head? Would those even fit?
Did the prop man or prop master, excuse me, have to come up with special headphones just for the horse? Probably, to especially to get him to stick on while it was running.
For him.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Love that one day he got to work and he was like, we need you to make ear headphones for a horse. Wow, okay. Yep.
I've been waiting for this my entire life.
I also really like the spinoff of that, the horse ear plus headphones.
Yes.
Like fan things that were in the crowd that the grandma and mom wore. That is a pretty good, pretty distinctive a fan purchase item for $5 probably on the streets of that town where the horse is from.
Yeah, no, I like those a lot as well, and they reminded me of the headphones from Josie and the Pussycats, where I was like, oh yeah, like those were like cute headphones people were selling because they like had cat ears on them. I'm like, how many people are going to be buying horse ear headphones? And one, like, do they even work? Were they real headphones or were they just like fake horse ear headphones? Because that's a very specific merchandise item.
That question proves that there are no horse girls in this conversation right now. Like, horse ear headphones, there's an entire subdivision of our population that would be like, yeah, I'm on it.
Uh-huh. Sari said $5, and this reminded me of the beginning of the movie when we see Corey get paid by Mr. Machado, and he pays her $5 a day for a lot of work.
Yeah, like manual labor too.
Yeah. And I don't know, I felt like she was grossly underpaid.
Yeah.
That's all.
I agree. Justice for Corey's labor.
I have so many feelings. I'm sorry. I didn't realize I had so many feelings about this movie. But I kept thinking about, too, this is part of the reason that the age thing bothered me, because there was so, I kept questioning it. So, I mean, the whole thing with the DCOM is not that it's like super immersive, but at least you can turn your brain off and watch and be like, yeah, that was like a children's movie. Cool. I couldn't stop thinking about like, okay, she's working for this man. She never goes to school. He pays her $5 a day. Is this legal? How much does she work? Is she allowed to be a horse jockey at 14? Can she do that? Is that like an unfair advantage if you just start putting children on horses when these men have to like meet a specific like height and weight requirement? Can you just put a child up there and everybody's okay with it? Can she buy a horse for a bag of peanuts? Was that a legal transaction? Like, I don't feel like that was at all. just, you know, it's too many questions.
The only trivia point on the IMDb page for Ready to Run specifically addresses one of your issues, and it says, in real life, Corey wouldn't have been able to buy Thunder Jam without her mom's permission. Her mom would have legally had the right to give Thunder Jam back to Hector. It's illegal to sell a horse to anybody under 18 without permission from their parents or legal guardians. So, boom.
I just love everything about that fact, that thing that just happened. I love that.
I like to think that it was like either a horse girl who really wanted a horse got mad and posted that, or a horse owner who was really mad after watching this movie and being like, you can't buy a horse, you're 14. And like, I'm going to write an angry trivia thing. Like, it's got a tone about it that is very specific.
It's definitely a horse girl who was like, I looked this up. I can't buy a horse. I'm 14 and neither can she.
My mom said no.
I was totally expecting that transaction to be like a source of conflict in the movie somehow, that like it would come back and you'd be like that, like, because I assume that there's like paperwork documenting ownership or whatever. I don't know how horses work, but I felt like that transaction did not feel legitimate to me as a viewer. And so I kept waiting for the mean businessman to be like, no, that transaction was bullshit. I get all your money now or whatever.
I was waiting for that too. That would make sense, but this movie does not make sense.
I was waiting for that Air Bud shoe to drop, because that's what happens in Air Bud, is like this old junkyard man or whatever gives away the dog. He becomes a super famous basketball player and he's like, hey, that's my dog, give him back.
I guess so. The real question that I have now is, has any of this convinced you to put Rip Girls above this movie?
Please. Oh, I personally wound up landing with Rip Girls one above. So Rip Girls is at 9 and Ready to Run is at 10.
Nope, staying the same for me. I think I dislike the dad too much in Rip Girls, and I dislike the parent dynamic in that, and I really liked the mom in this, so I think that edges it above of all this other nonsense.
All my feelings feel wasted. I tried so hard.
I also supported the budding romance between the mom and Hector that I enjoyed as well. That was like sweet.
That was cute, yes.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, like, the middling movies are just, like, they're middling. Like, I don't know, man. Like, this whole middle section, you could rearrange it on me while I'm not looking, and I'd be like, yeah, that's my list. That makes sense.
But that's why I think this is a more egregious thing for me and Nicole to be putting this in the middle, because both Mari and Sari have Rip Girls near the top of their list. Uh-huh. So for us to be including Ready to Run and Rip Girls near the middle of the list together, I think is the more problematic issue.
Okay. I understand now. I don't know what to tell you. We can only have so many things
at the top.
Yeah.
I have one last thing I want to say before we move on to the discussion. And it's just, okay, so they call the gift that she has, that she can talk to horses, la confianza de los caballos. And so they translate it to the confidence of horses. And it is not incorrect. It's like confidence, like if somebody told you something, I have to tell you something in confidence, like that kind of translation of confidence. Oh. However, a more accurate translation would be the trust of horses, like you've earned their trust versus their confidence. And so every time they were like, the confidence of horses, I was like, no, stop it. Stop with your Google Translate. I reject this translation of that phrase. Will you move it to the middle now under Rip Girls, please?
I feel like in a week or two I'm gonna get like an email from Mari being like, here are 5 more reasons you should bump Ready to Run down your list. That is interesting though. I like the translation leading to like the trust of the horses, like, still makes sense in the context of the movie, but it's definitely not the way it was presented.
Right, you hear confidence, I think in English, like that word tends to bring up something that is different than like the way that they were using confianza in Spanish. And again, it's not wrong, because that is one of the definitions of confidence. Like, you can tell somebody something in confidence. And that was kind of more of like the secretive trust, like, I trust you in order to keep this sort of thing, that I thought that they were going for, versus like the confidence of like a, you know, hurrah, strong horses running sort of thing. So every time they said it, I mean, on top of the fact that it was referencing talking horses, I was like, oh no. And I just wanted you all to know that before we moved on.
Well, no, I think that's good though, because I think that if they had leaned into that, like the idea that these horses chose her to talk to because they trusted her after she freed the other horse, I'm like, oh yeah, that makes sense in the context of this weird movie. And yes, you totally could have leaned on that.
Well, yeah, and it's weird too, because they made it seem like that's what happened, but then they like took that back several scenes later when it was like, no, it's because her dad had it. And so it was like an inherited thing. But the timing of the gift felt in context originally like the horses chose her because she freed the other horse.
Which it could have been both, like, you know, in this family or these people who, you know, are really good with horses and the horses trust them. Like, it can still be like a bloodline thing, but I don't know. They kind of lost the thread there of like it being like, oh, we're going to, you know, trust this girl, make ourselves known to her because she freed one of us. Like, that was kind of the thing they were going for. And then it just got lost. And the translation was bad. We can move on. It's fine. We can move on.
Well, in keeping with the fact that Corey's gift was passed down to her by her father, this week we are talking about family traditions and what kind of, weird and interesting things y'all have received from your families or refused to receive. I don't know. I don't know your lives. Okay.
I feel like my family doesn't have very many get-togethery type traditions. We don't really have reunions. We don't really like celebrate holidays in a particularly special way. But I think, and this is not a clinical diagnosis or anything, I think my family is pretty much hoarders in that everyone has collections of things. So, for example, my great aunt has like thousands of marbles. My aunt, my dad's sister, has hundreds of Pez. And I have inherited the tradition of hoarding useless things because I like them. I think my dad at some point would go to McDonald's and he would have, maybe Burger King, and he would have me, my brother, and him all order like 4 kids' meals total so that he could get all the Halloween Simpsons toys that Burger King was selling. And like this spirit of I must collect them all is deeply ingrained into me. And I don't know, I have like a coin collection of quarter, like state quarters, but also just coins from random, like various countries that I've stumbled across. And I have a bunch of half dollar coins and a bunch of $2 bills. I have a bag of Pez that when I moved into this house, my partner and I looked on like Pez websites to see if any of them were valuable, if we could make money off of them, because some of them are pretty old. The answer was no, unfortunately, but I'm going to hang on to these old Santa Claus Pez, so maybe someday. I have like a chest full of Pokemon cards. I don't know. This is it. This is the tradition. Hoarding.
I love that story of your dad. I love all of your stories of your dad. That is great.
So I feel like I'm definitely in the camp of a lot of traditions and things my family did when I was growing up, I quickly rejected. And I think it's a lot of my family is like from the South and they're very hunty and fishy. And that's how you describe people, right?
Fishy.
they're into hunting and fishing.
Those fishy people.
They do those things, you know, with guns and rods or whatever. But those were things that I was like, fishing is boring. Why are we in this boat for 3 hours? And so it's been like interesting to like grow up and like see like all my cousins. I have so many freaking cousins, like 21 first cousins just on my mom's side. And like many of them have like kept the family traditions of like still going on like yearly fishing trips with each other and meeting up to do these things. And I'm just like, I guess I'll just be over here not getting to join in those things. And so there's times where I like feel like jealous that they have that, where they get to do a thing all together. But then other times I'm like, wait, but you hate fishing. You would hate that. You don't go hang out with your cousins in a boat for a week. You wouldn't like it. So I don't know. I feel like it leads to me missing out on things, but weirdly, mm-hmm. that feeling where you're missing out on something you don't actually want to do.
Mm-hmm. I'm just imagining you like sitting in a boat wishing that you could be watching a movie instead. Like holding a fishing pole, looking around and like, you might imagine how did I come to this place when you would just want to be sitting on your couch in the exact same position, no fishing rod.
Does this boat get Wi-Fi? No, never mind. I'll catch fish in Animal Crossing all day, but I will not do it in real life.
Mine is like, I don't know if it's a tradition. It's like kind of what Corey had in the sense of like a passed down occupation almost. I don't know. This is the only thing that I could think of. So I get from a long line of preachers and pastors. It is just really widespread in my family. Like the church that I go to is pastored by my aunt and uncle. And my mom has 5 full blood brothers and sisters. She has 10 step siblings, other step siblings. But of the 5, 4 of them are pastors. One passed away. She was also like an evangelist, so she would go around preaching to other countries. And my mom works in the church where we go. My father is also a pastor, and on his side as well. It's just like a deep line of like that religious tradition, I guess you would say. And it's always really weird because then people are like, you know, what does your parents do? And I'm like, I mean, they have like 9-to-5 jobs, but also they spend a lot of their time giving back and working at the church and stuff. So it's always been something that's like really present in our lives. If I ever get married, like my aunt would marry me as my pastor. So it's just something that is, you know, really present, but also obviously not a tradition I have carried on. I have no intentions of leading a church or being a pastor. So yeah, the buck stops here, I guess.
Yeah, that feeling, like, I'm not trying to like put that weird pressure on you, Mari, but like, is there a feeling of like, man, I am finishing off this tradition, like it has been a thing, and like, sorry guys.
I mean, I have 2 sisters, so if they want to pick up the mantle, right. Like, yeah, I don't feel the pressure to like.
It's not just on
why
you.
Why is it all on me?
Right. I'm gonna speak for them and say the buck stops here, but also like, though, the other side of that is like, nobody, like, as much as you could feel like, wow, you know, this is like something that obviously like has been very present in our family and it like stops with me, like nobody else would want that. Like nobody would want me to lead a church or be a pastor. This is ultimately for the best good of everybody. Amen.
I am a little bit at a loss. I feel like my family has like, we're like traditions, but they're fairly, I don't know, like basic traditions. It's just, it's like, it's more that my family takes like holidays and events and stuff like that super seriously, like that kind of thing. We travel for like my cousin's high school graduations. Like that's, I fly across many state lines to go to my cousin's high school graduation, like that kind of thing. Life events, gathering events, all of that kind of stuff, they take fairly seriously. But the thing that first popped into my head, and this is like, I feel really silly following Mari's like rather legitimate thing up with this. But like, speaking of the travel thing, like that actually is probably the, I don't know, the closest thing I can think of as like a family thing. My dad has traveled a lot for work basically my entire life. And like, we moved to California when I was really, really young, but both my parents are from the Midwest. So, you know, we traveled a bunch as a family, but also like my dad, because of business, has been like racking up like frequent flyer miles and like hotel points and all of that kind of stuff. Like since I was a kid, I remember seeing Up in the Air when it came out in theaters, and I was like, that is like my dad. It's like my dad and my dad didn't have a family. So like there's that. And it's to the point where like, I know off the top of my head, for example, like where the like what the hubs are of all the major airlines in the US. I know, like, if you're like, what airlines, if you're flying on a given airline, I can probably tell you where you are most likely to fly through, like that kind of thing. And it's just from like being around my dad. It's more from that than it is from my own travel, which I do also do a lot of, but my parents did meet because my mom was the travel agent for the company where, like, they both worked at the same company and she was a travel agent, and he has always traveled a lot for work. So I don't know, I guess there's a tie in that respect. Like it is part of our lives in that sort of way. But I don't know, I'm reaching. And I know it.
Usually we all take our turns and that's it. But I have to like jump in to defend you here because it is 100% legitimate. The tradition of travel amongst the Sweeneys is like a tangible, palpable thing. Like if you visit with them, you're just like, oh my gosh, like the legacy, the way that they all talk about travel. We, Nicole and I, RIP because of the global pandemic. But, you know, previous to this year, we've been going to Coachella together for a lot of like a string of years now, and even before that Nicole goes every year or whatnot, but it's like all her family and me and other people bring friends to her, like her brothers and sisters bring friends to. But I mean, the first couple of times I was like, this is like wild to me, the fact that like your whole family is like flying from all over the US to come and do this yearly thing and they all bring friends, and it's just like, hey, what's up, what's your name, you're part of the family now. Like that is not something that everybody does or has. So while in your head it might be like, oh, this is silly, but this is something that it's not something that everybody does.
Yeah, no, my family never traveled, like, ever when I was a kid. Like, the furthest we went from Chicago was Tennessee or Michigan. So, like, the only time I've ever left the country was going to Canada, and that was last year. So, the idea of, like, family travel and thing is not ingrained in me at all. So, yeah, when I see, like, you, Nicole, posting pictures of your whole family doing these things, I'm just like, whoa, that is, like, a whole other world that to me that I have never been a part of.
Well, thank you guys for validating my submission to the group.
We are all valid, from Pez to fishing to pastors to travel. Family legacies are real.
Your family story also made me think more about this movie. And like, did her mom work at that diner and then the dad was a jockey? And did they meet because they worked close to each other? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I need to know. Ready to Run 2, the prequel. Let's go.
Yeah. So you're saying this group of olds watching children movie wants to know the parents' story? I'm shocked.
Oh, no. Oh, no. I'm a predictable old.
It would be very dramatic, though. Like, with Machado, like, having a secret crush on her as the diner one, and then the dad actually falling in. Mm. Mm-hmm. Yep, yes. That's some adult.
I'm ready for
an old drama.
The Hallmark movie is where this movie lives. I'm ready, I'm ready to watch the Hallmark movie.
Yeah, it's called Not Yet Ready.
And now it is time to discuss the lessons that we learned from Ready to Run. I'm going to start, because it's the most obvious lesson and I don't want anyone to take it from me. I learned that a good beat is really helpful when you're running. I didn't learn that from this movie. I knew that already, but that's what I'm going to say.
I'm going to read word for word what I have written down. Lesson: sick beats help you get ready to run. I would be required to change mine and give a different lesson, but I'm not going to, because that is what I wrote down, and I'm going with it. So plus one on your lesson.
I mean, I wrote down, if you set a horse free, you get to talk to horses.
And I learned that if you're a kid, you can be anything you want to be, including an ex rodeo clown turned jockey turned horse DJ, maybe.
And now, to close out this episode, it is time for Sari to guess the plot of the next movie. Next time on Cooler Than Homework, we are watching Quince.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Well, obviously, it's about quintuplets. because why else would you call something quince? So it must be... I haven't really seen the Lindsay Lohan movie where she's the girl and then she's also the other girl that's British
the
and they meet
Trump.
At camp. That one. But I imagine it's kind of like that, except for with quintuplets. So it's not Lindsay Lohan, but it's a different person. And there are five of them, and we just keep cutting between these five different identical children. Maybe they actually cast quintuplets. Like, that would be a very weird, bizarre casting call. And they're all going through their own 13-year-old problems. Perhaps we meet them all on their birthday. And one of them is, like, a rich girl having an extravagant birthday. One of them is a boy who is deciding to run away from home. One of them is another girl who is trying to deliver newspapers. I don't know, has a job or something.
We're back to newsies.
Yep. One of them is a girl. She has to play a weird sport. She's a ping pong champion. And
nice.
The last one is a boy who is like an internet nerd. And he's the one who brings them all together because he like... goes online and then sees that this girl looks kind of like him. They're not identical quintuplets. I guess that ruins the Lindsay Lohan thing anyway. Oops. they're not all played by the same actor, but it could be played by the same kid actor with good makeup. I'm talking around in circles. Internet lad Googles them, finds out that, wow, that's weird that this ping pong champion has the same birthday. And wow, this rich kid who's having a birthday party publicized by MTV, but Disney version also has the same birthday. And they all end up in the same place at the same time, like the same Toys R Us. And I don't know, they solve their problems together. What's the tagline?
Oh, it's not gonna help.
Well, so tagline, we have two taglines. The first one is going to make you feel like you're on the right track. Tagline one, as if life at 14 isn't twisted enough. Could totally be the tagline for the movie you've just described. Mm-hmm. The second tagline, Jamie wanted a little space. What she got was five brothers and sisters.
Oh, man. Rats. I mean, I guess this means that they're all... being 14 is hard enough. So Jamie must be our main character then. Ah, man, I was looking forward to quintuplet main characters and just seeing what the movie would do. But I'm sure then like five babies are born. And so it's just the antics of a teenage girl trying to take care of these five babies. We probably don't even see them. We probably see like little babies being pushed around in a giant stroller, or like a dad strapped with five baby Bjorns. And she's like very embarrassed by the fact that she has to be around five babies all the time, and then learns to love her family. The end.
Amazing. Find out if that is the plot of this movie next time on Cooler Than Homework. Also, if you have seen Quince and you have any suggestions for us for discussion topics or introductions or anything like that, please let us know. There will be a post dedicated to this episode up at snarksquad.com/decom, or you can find us on Twitter at Decom Squad. I am at Sweeney Says.
I am at Matthew Gatos.
You can find me at My Name is Marines.
And I'm at C.E. Riley.
This podcast is a Snark Squad production, edited by me, transcribed by Mari, and our theme music is by Stefan Chin.